brief Miller analogies type test for you. How do these two statements compare? A, I don't want your pity. B, I know I'm forgiven, I just can't forgive myself. Now, are these statements, A and B, different, or are they essentially the same? If you answered that they are different, you are only technically correct. They are different in that they are comprised of two differing sets of words. But if you answered number two, that they are the same, you are principally correct. Because these two statements, while appearing quite different in nature, actually spring from the same soil and are essentially two of the same kind of statements. I know what you're saying. Huh? Both are the refusal to live by pity? How is that so? Well, let me give you an explanation. The first statement, I don't want your pity, is the sort of sentiment we express, generally in anger, when we feel that someone is looking down on us or is acting toward us based not on our virtue or our ability, but in spite of the presence of our virtue or ability. It feels demeaning to be pitied to most of us, most of the time, and of course it can be. If a smug sister condescendingly laments to you that she pities you because, well, you're so like you are, it is taken and meant, whether she acknowledges it or not, as a put-down. But if someone sees you in a state of disorientation and confusion and pities you because they realize you cannot help yourself, it is meant as a gesture of compassionate love. But we are 93.67% likely to receive it as an insult because our pride has been wounded. Now the second statement, statement B, I know I'm forgiven, I just can't forgive myself, is the sort of sentiment we express, generally, in anguish or dismay, when we feel an adhesive sort of guilt or regret that no amount of rationalizing seems to shake away. When we say it, we feel an inward throb of self-indictment and keen self-disappointment that we are the sort of person that actually did or didn't do the sort of thing that we now realize that we actually did or should have done. So on the face of it, statement B is an anguished response of a differing caliber from the angry assertion, I don't want your pity. But don't just look on the faces of the statements. The statements are simply two creative masks that your pride chooses to wear so that you and those around you might potentially be fooled by them. The pride that generates the sulky sentiment, I just can't forgive myself, is purely a refusal to live by pity. Your pride is hurt, mighty hurt, by the fact that you have revealed yourself as the type of person that is only going to remain in the good graces of others, God, and yourself, if there is some amount of pity shown to you. The anger of hurt pride that is turned outward in the statement, I don't want your pity, is aimed with precision on your inner self in the statement, I just can't forgive myself. You hate it that you are going to have to depend on mercy, which is another word for pity, in order to be relationally okay. So, in both cases, you're saying, I don't want to live by pity, because your pride makes you so occasionally self-deluded that you think yourself good enough not to need any. This is why Dallas Willard writes, as he does, to those, or of those rather, that say, I cannot forgive myself. More often than not, these are people who refuse to live on the basis of pity. Their problem is not that they are hard on themselves, but that they are proud. And if they are hard on themselves, it is because they are proud. They do not want to accept that they can only live on the basis of pity from others, that the good that comes to them is rarely deserved. If they would only do that, accept what they don't wish to accept, it would transform their lives. They would easily stop punishing themselves for what they have done. Of course, it is because of masquerading pride and pity refusal in our actions that Jesus tells the terrifying and stunning story about the unmerciful servant in Matthew 18. You remember the fellow who strangled his coworker because he failed to pay him back $5, and this Right after the Strangler's boss had said, forget about it, to that $800,000 loan the Strangler was suddenly unable to account for? Jesus wants to shock every one of us into the freeing but sobering realization that God's pity is the air that we must breathe to survive. Because he is keeping the books, and because there isn't a second of our lives when we aren't accumulating a sizable debt before him in terms of what we leave undone or what we do, there aren't any seconds of the day that we can walk around without his pity or without his willingness to treat us as our actions haven't earned. In fact, a major nugget to take away from that story is that the primary resource for forgiveness comes not from taking on God's role as judge and punisher of others or of ourselves, but rather from refusing God's role and instead standing again beneath the warm, replenishing shower of his inexhaustible pity toward us. So we are inclined again and again to show those rascals around us and even ourselves, who are always offending us in some way, the very pity that God has rubbed so healingly into our bones. And you know, once you think about it honestly, you realize that all the good relationships you enjoy depend far more on the kindness of the one you are in relationship with than on your goodness. We are offended to realize that folks around us are having to put up with all sorts of inconveniences, weirdnesses, and moodinesses, and flat-out sins. But guess what? They do. They love us despite these things, just like we love those despite their irritating habits and selfishnesses. The man who wants no pity is eaten up with pride. The woman who cannot forgive herself is as well. The remedy for each is to stop being eaten up with themselves and instead permit themselves to be swallowed up in God's mercy or pity, which doesn't count any of our sins against us. And trust me, you're really a lot worse than you imagine, and therefore an eligible candidate, like I, for dump truck loads of divine pity. When you realize the debt you have accrued before God, you'll only want mercy from God, and you'll be able to show it to others and to yourself as well. We don't ever really need to forgive ourselves, but we do need to accept God's forgiveness, something a proud person can never pull off. As soon as you realize this is oxygen for your spiritual life, though, questions will occur to you regarding other selves, like these. What right have I to be severe to the self that God adores? How can I be impatient with the self that God treats so patiently? How can I fail to show compassion, otherwise known as pity, to the self that Christ continues to show pity to? The answer, of course, to each is, I can't, and I shouldn't. And when you start asking and answering questions like these adequately, a sort of indestructible, solid happiness begins to seep into your pores and flavor how you relate to everyone, including God, your neighbor, and yourself. This is why Martin Luther said that when he understood the gospel, it was as if the gates of paradise had opened up to him. May Christ tenderly open those gates to us, and may we, with his life mediating through us, be keys for opening those gates to others as well. And may he demolish the pride which always tries to permanently lock those gates to desperate sinners.